I'm sitting here in Rotterdam in the Netherlands with my dear friend from India, Yesupadam. This interview today might just change your life for years to come.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us. I've been coming your way from Rotterdam in the Netherlands for the last few days. And God willing, we'll be coming away from Italy a little bit later in the week or beginning of next week. But many of you know, if you've listened to the show over the years, one of my dearest friends in the world, Yesupadam from India. I've been ministering there every year with him basically since 1993 in India. We've ministered together in the States. We've ministered together in Germany and in Korea. And he's been ministering in Germany now. When he found out I was coming to Holland, he and some other brothers drove 4 or 5 hours, came over and joined us. So I said, well, we're doing a radio interview. So Yesupadam, great to have you back on The Line of Fire.
Yeah, it's wonderful to be here, my friend.
All right, so tell me what you've been doing in Germany. I mean, here you are, an Indian. God calls you to Germany, very different culture. Let me ask you this, because we have a lot of time to go in depth. Are you seeing the same fruit from the gospel in Germany that you saw in India?
Gospel has the same power to change lives, but number-wise, not as many that we reached in India could able to reach in Germany, because people are not really open, but whoever got gospel still works.
People same gospel.
Changed. Yeah.
Same change. Germany is part of Europe, which is a dark continent spiritually, you mentioned. When you were teaching the students here at Fire School of Ministry in Europe, that it's the darkest continent in the world right now spiritually. Do you have hope for Germany and for Europe?
Absolutely. That's why Jesus came. There's no place that cannot be changed, no person that cannot be changed. When gospel was preached and the love of God is shown to them in a personal level. We have been watching that happening in Germany. One at a time, but we have been going to train station and sharing the gospel with the people there, sitting, taking drugs and drinking, and homeless people, black dress people. And as we go there, start talking to them, touching them, giving them hugs and making them understand that they are loved and they are accepted. And there's God that loves them, that cares for them. We have seen a lot of tears.
And is it true that a German leader once told you, we don't have poor people here, go back to India?
Yes. I wanted an advice from some Christian leaders also. And most of the Christian leaders said, it doesn't work in Germany. Then I went to a Christian social worker, who is a very famous man, hoping that he will encourage me to do what God called me to do. And he said, who do you think you are? You're an Indian. Go back to India. There's no poor people in Germany for your hot dogs. Go to India or Africa and help the poor people.
So you smiled at him?
I smiled at him and I said, thank you. That made him more determination to do what God called me to do.
Yeah, amazing. And I've been with you in Germany and seeing the fruit. And now you've had property donated. Acres of property and buildings?
Yeah, 5 acres of land with 5 buildings on it. And 3 of them are very good, usable, and newly renovated. And we actually break down a couple of buildings which are not good. And we want to rebuild so that we can accommodate the people from the street. And also, we also want to concentrate on the immigrants. There are a lot of immigrants coming into Europe from Africa and Middle East.
And you're seeing some of these people are getting saved and actually becoming disciples.
Yes, exactly. We started a Bible study for them every Tuesday. We have every Thursday, they come to Jesus' house, the house which God has provided us.
Amazing.
And we give them a hot meal and spend 2-3 hours at least with them every Thursday.
All right, friends, you're going to be encouraged. I want Yesupadam to share some of his testimony with you, which will move you deeply. And you'll realize what God can do through a yielded life today, right here on The Line of Fire.
Give us
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, I'm not taking any phone calls today, devoting this entire broadcast to this interview with my dear, close friend, Yesu Padam. God's joined us together in an extraordinary way, and we are like blood brothers in Jesus, Jew and Gentile, American and Indian, joined together in Jesus. But I want to encourage you, you're going to hear some amazing stuff. I'm an eyewitness to it. It's not hype. It's not exaggerated. I'm an eyewitness to it. I've seen it with my own eyes. God willing, this December will be 23 trips to India, 23 years in India. The ministry going on there is some of the most extraordinary ministry you'll see anywhere in the world. The churches planted in tribal regions, the care for the children and orphans, the humanitarian work, it's quite extraordinary. I want to encourage you to participate. Oh yeah, sure, our ministry could use all kinds of funding. Absolutely. But I want to encourage you to get behind Brother Yesu Padam's ministry today. Go to the website, Love and Care Ministries, which is LNC, as in Love and Care, lncministries.org, and then click on sponsorships. Now, you're not going to mishear me when I tell you this. It'll sound surprising. You can support full-time a pastor preaching the gospel in a tribal region where they've planted probably over 7,000 churches now. You can support a pastor there full-time preaching the gospel, making disciples, raising a family for $50 a month, 50. Some of you got a big family. You can't go to a fast food restaurant for one meal for $50. Or you can't take your spouse out to a nice restaurant for $50. $50 a month pays all the expenses for the pastor and his family to live and preach the gospel in a tribal region. $25 a month pays all the expenses to sponsor a child, provides their room, their board, their education. And these kids are growing up to love Jesus and getting an education so good that the Hindus send their kids to this school. So go to Love and Care Ministries, lncministries.org. You'll see on the top, it says sponsorships. Click on that, and then you can look. You can pick out, okay, here's the kid I want to sponsor. Make it a family project. Have your kids pool their change together. Click on one of the pictures of the pastors. Virtually every one of these we've laid hands on. I've been there at their graduation to lay hands on them and send them out. They're going for it, and they're in places that most of us couldn't live for a matter of days, let alone weeks, months, years, but they're going for it, for the gospel. So, Yesu Padam, you've shared your testimony with our listeners on the air before, but many are new listeners, and every day there are new people tuning in. You were raised an untouchable, even though your father came to faith in Jesus. That didn't affect your social status. In fact, he suffered literally physically for it. You raised an untouchable, slept on the floor of a thatched roof hut, mom and dad, five kids. You say as it rained down on you. What was your social status? What was it like to be with other kids? I know that you went to school because you were too weak to work, but what was life like for you as an untouchable boy in India?
Well, you don't really feel like a human being. People don't treat you as a human being, and you cannot play with other children. Also in the school, I have to sit at the back bench because I cannot sit with all other children. Never felt loved and never felt accepted. And as I was growing up, you know, it was more difficult to see that. Born as a human being, but never treated as a human being. So that was the hardest thing for me as a child growing up.
If the kids were drinking water, how did you get your water?
Well, I would not many times they don't give me water. I can't get a glass. Sometimes I have to put my hands, two hands together down, and they pour the water into my hands. I have to drink from my hands. Mm-hmm. And many times they don't even give, but if at all they give, that's how. I used to drink before.
And sometimes you would do work for someone, you knew they had money, and at the end of the day, they just send you away. You'll get your money tomorrow, which meant you wouldn't eat.
Exactly. That's the hardest thing. The whole family can work the whole day, and at the end of the day, the man says, there's no money, come tomorrow. So that day, we have to starve. There would be no food in the house.
Was that common?
It's most of the time.
You said something to our students today that was very touching. And I don't know, as much as we've talked about this, I don't know that I'd ever really heard that before. What did your mother do when you came home from school every day?
She used to come home and put her hand on my stomach and to feel my stomach, because she knows in the morning when I went to school, she did not feed me. And I came back home and she knows that there's no food in the house. So she used to touch my stomach and kiss on my stomach and cry. I didn't understand that time why she was doing that. But now I understand, because she has no food in the house and she didn't know what to do except to kiss the empty stomach of her son and to cry.
What about when you almost died of malnutrition?
There was a missionary that came from Canada. He was going in a jeep and he saw me like a dead kid in the middle of the road. He did not pass me by. Many Indians might have seen me because I was an untouchable. They didn't want to touch me and help me. But this white Canadian missionary, he touched me, he carried me in his hands and drove me to a hospital, a Baptist hospital, which they established maybe like 3-4 hours from the place where he picked me up, and kept me there for 2 weeks and he helped me. If he did not pick me up that time, I might have been died on the road there. And with my wife, Monica, and kids, 4 years ago, we went to see him. He's still alive. He's in Nova Scotia. We went there to see him, and he told to my wife that there's no way he should have been alive that time when he picked me up, when he took me to the hospital. Doctors even were surprised that I was alive.
But somehow, even though your father had become a Christian and gave you the name Yesu Padam, Jesus Foot, so that you would be like the foot of Jesus going, walking through India, sharing the gospel with people, telling people about Jesus. And even though this missionary was compassionate, you still didn't come to faith. Instead, you were enlisted by a radical communist when you were just 11 years old. What was the appeal? How was it that this man was able to reach out to you and other untouchables?
You know what he said, I don't have to live the life that I'm living. If I have to be treated as a human being, I must fight for my rights. And he also used to say that, you know, the rich people are drinking your blood in the form of your sweat. Your families and you work so hard for them, they get rich and you have no food. So they said, the only way that you can come out of that is, you must fight for your rights and join the Communist Party and just to bring a social revolution in the nation of India to give hope to the untouchable community.
And they also educated you and then weaved in with that communist ideology, right?
Yes. He was from a very rich family. He left everything to follow the communist ideology. And he helped us in our village. He lived in our village, untouchable village, married to an untouchable woman, lived in our village, in our hearts, to convert us to be communists. But he also helped us with education. He said, education is important. You must study, come up in life, and fight for your rights.
And then you watched your mother die, a painful death on the floor, the dirt floor of your hut. And she died because your father didn't have the wherewithal to get her medical care. What snapped inside of you at that point?
I was so angry to watch my mom, loving mom, dying the way she died, because we didn't have money. My dad could not take her to the hospital. And my thoughts were like, I don't want to live. I want to die. Instead of living like an animal, worse than an animal, I thought I should die. I tried twice. I attempted 2 times to kill myself. One time to jump into the river and kill myself. And so somehow I know now God kept me alive. But that day I realized that instead of dying, I must even kill the people needed to prove that I'm a human being. I should come up in life. That's the philosophy of the communism. Kill the rich, feed the poor.
And when you were a boy, you had signed with your own blood to become a communist. And now when your mother died, you fully gave yourself to
that. Totally to that. Very angry, very upset. And so I started drinking, and because with the right mind, I don't think anybody can do the things that we did. And went into gangs and fighting and killing and doing stuff to the point that I was, I don't know, I was not even just happy doing that. I want to really persecute them more before.
Yeah. So you gave yourself to a revolutionary cause, but one that was destructive. And in the midst of this, early 20s, alcoholic, atheist, violent, communist, something happens that not only changed your life, but is now, in the process, changed the lives of multiplied tens of thousands of others. When we come back, you'll hear about the amazing grace that came to Yesu Padam in India.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm sitting here in Rotterdam in Holland, Netherlands, with my dear friend and co-worker, Yesu Padam from Love and Care Ministries in India. He was in Germany, so came over a several-hour drive in Holland to join me for a few days here and share with our students as I'm teaching on Jesus Revolution, share with our students here at Fire School of Ministry Europe. I want to encourage you to go to his website, not just to go there, to become an active sponsor, to sponsor a pastor in the tribal regions, full-time sponsor him and his family and his full-time pastoral gospel work, reaching the unreached and discipling the saved. $50 a month, you can do that. Every dime goes exactly where it says it will go. $25 a month, you can sponsor a precious Indian child being raised to love Jesus, probably praying more in a day than most of us pray in a week, in the Word, getting a first-class education. You can cover all their expenses, living expenses, room and board, education for $25 a month. Go to LNC Ministries, as in love and care, lncministries.org, and click on sponsorships to sponsor one of these pastors and his families or one of these kids. So, Yesu Padam, I only know a little of how lost you were before you were saved, those dark, dark years, what you shared. But I know the ugliness of it. I've heard you share your testimony and how Jesus touched you. What ministers to me is not only does it not get old for me to hear, but you shared it over and over and over and always with tears, always overwhelmed at God's grace. What is now the turning point in your life from violent atheist, alcoholic, communist to passionate follower of Jesus?
1976, January 26, around 1:30 in the noontime, I was sitting in the chair, looked towards the sky. I saw the shape of a man hanging on the cross. I know that I heard the story of Jesus, though I didn't believe it. I read Bible as a communist to prove that Bible is wrong and also to convert some of the untouchable youth who are already Christians to be a communist and to train them in the gangs. So when I saw that, I thought to myself, it could be Jesus. But then again, I was like, no, it's not true. It cannot be. These thoughts are going through my mind. I saw as if somebody zoomed a lens, his hand and the nail in his hand and the blood drop after drop falling from the nail torn hand of the Savior. When I saw that, I was totally shocked and surprised. But to my surprise, he did not leave me there. He spoke to me. He spoke to me in my language. It's a male, audible male voice in my language. It says, son, I did all this for you. What will you do for me? That word son broke my heart. And the first time in my life, I heard such a loving voice in my life. And that was so clear to me. And I know it is me. He said, son, I've done all this for you. What would you do for me? It broke my heart, brought tears to my eyes. I was sitting there. Really, the conviction of sin came over me. The Lord took over my life. And just for 40, 45 minutes, I didn't see my watch exactly. But I was just weeping like a baby. And all the things that I did just came before me. And I was crying there. And finally, I said there were two things actually that came to my remembrance when I was that those things were happening. Number one, I started hearing my dad's words again. He always told me, son, Jesus loves you. He died for you and you must serve him. And even after I became a communist, he never gave up on my life. He continued to pray for me. He continued to talk to me every time he saw me. And those words started coming back to me. That brought me to more conviction. I heard this. I know my dad. He told me, but I rejected it because of the physical sufferings and the pain and the hunger and untouchability I was going through. And the second thing was what the missionary has done to me. A white man all the way from Canada touched me, carried me, took me to the hospital, paid for my medical bills and everything that he did. And at that time, a small voice in my heart started telling, that's God's love. Mm. That's God's love. And that friends, you know, just thinking about God's love, talking about God's love, it always brings tears to my eyes. That in spite of who we are, how far we are, what we are doing, but God is still trying to reach us out in different many ways. Me like that and different people in different ways. And his love is never fails. And he's always willing to reach us in whatever situation we are in.
And once Jesus changed your life, what's the first thing you went out and did?
Well, immediately I thought to myself, how can anybody miss the reality of Jesus? This is living Jesus. It's so, so true, so real. And immediately I thought, my people need to hear this truth. My people who do not know real God, who's worshiping so many idols as gods and goddesses, who are so religious, who are looking for God, they need to hear this. Immediately I got up from there, went to the street corner, literally clapping and calling people and telling them that believe in Jesus, he's the God, he's real, he's true.
And some thought you were crazy.
Absolutely. Physically, they thought literally, I'm crazy, I lost my mind, because many of them know me, my other activities.
All right, so you went from untouchable to violent communist, alcoholic, atheist, to radical follower of Jesus. Very limited educational background because of your upbringing and the sufferings you passed through. Let's glorify the Lord. This is all to the glory of the Lord now. But in India, what has the Lord allowed you to build, produce? Just, this is all to the glory of the Lord.
Well, by the grace of God, we trained over 2,000 pastors and thousands of churches, orphanages, schools, a college, a nursing school. We training disabled people in computers, tailoring and printing press. And we are building a 100-bedded hospital to train the doctors and the dentists and paramedical staff, and reaching hundreds and thousands of people. I was preaching to 1.5 million people one time, sitting in front of me, and we prepare at least 2,000 meals a day in one of our bases in India.
Yeah, and you've also already built a hospital as well, plus the one you're building in old folks' homes and so on. Friends, I want you to join in and participate, all right? This is not fundraising for me. Yesu Pongsa is going to send money back to us. This is for the gospel, all right? Go right now to lncministries.org. LNC is in love and care. lncministries.org. And click on where it says sponsorship. And for $25 a month, you can pay full time the tuition, room, board, education for a child that will be raised in a wonderful, godly, solid environment. The school's so good, the Hindus, local Hindus, send their kids there and they hear the gospel. Or $50 a month, support a pastor, full time, church planter, making disciples in tribal regions. Or if you can't make a monthly commitment, just click on where it says donate. And let's really bless this ministry today, which is sacrificially blessing hundreds and hundreds of thousands, not just in India, but around the world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast, your listener-sponsored voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. What a delight to be here in Rotterdam in the Netherlands with our wonderful fire team here. They are passionate. They are going for it. They are seeking God in prayer and fasting. They are reaching out to the lost. They are standing for righteousness. They are living together as a community to make a difference. And we're trusting that we'll draw students from all over Europe here to Rotterdam to be trained and go out as world changers. And one of the great surprises this week is my dear Indian friend Yesu Padam has been ministering in Germany and staying there for some time. So he came over with a few friends. They drove several hours, about 4 or 5 hours, to join with us here. And I said, hey, you're here, man. We're doing a radio interview. So Yesu Padam, we talked in the last half hour about your testimony and how God radically saved you. And you've been the same as long as I've known you. I've never seen you differently. Same heart for the Lord through hard times and good times. Same passion for the lost. Same real care for the poor and the needy. When you were a communist revolutionary before you were saved, a violent revolutionary, Jesus, his teaching was known. And some people would even look at him as a radical revolutionary leader. But when you came to faith, you didn't throw out your revolutionary mentality. You exchanged a destructive, violent revolutionary mentality for a life-giving one. So in what way do you see Jesus as a revolutionary leader?
Well, behind every revolution, there's a bloodshed. And you think of any revolution that took place in the world, a lot of people has been killed and a lot of blood has been shed. But that's how I said Jesus' revolution is also started with his blood. But that is his blood for the sake of the whole world. He did not kill anybody. He has given his blood as a ransom of that sin. So I see that this revolution which Jesus started, nobody could ever able to stop it. All the revolutions has come and gone. But this love revolution, no power on earth could able to stop it. It spread all over the world. It started 2,000 years ago, and it will never stop because this is the love revolution through his own blood to save the whole world. So for me, like if I was willing to lay down my life for a short revolution, like a social revolution, but what would stop me? This eternal, unchanging love of God revolution through the blood of his son, Jesus Christ, to spread it the whole world.
Amen. All right, we've got a minute and a half before the break, but you're always doing ministry to the poor. When you're in Germany, you're reaching out to the poor, to the homeless, to the hurting. You're always doing it in India, caring for the hurting and the poor. Why do you do it? A lot of American pastors think, okay, we should do this because it's a good thing to do and God would bless us. Is that why you do it, so that God will bless you financially as you help the poor? What motivates you?
No, Jesus spoke very clearly. He said, penetrate into the community. When Jesus was alive, he went and saw the needs of the people and met with the needs of the people. That's why. That's the model of Jesus, what he did. He saw the sick, he healed them. He saw the hungry, he fed them. Even Matthew 25, talking about nakedness and in the prison and the sickness. So to me, like, this is dealing with the lives of the people directly, involving with their lives.
And look, I've told you this, but it struck me as we do our water baptisms every year, and we'll have elderly being baptized, and we'll have little children, not little children, but children old enough that are being baptized, that there's this tenderness I'll see as you speak to them, and I think you really care. It struck me. God's blessed my brother in the ministry there by faith as they lived all these years sacrificially. God's blessed them because they don't just do what they do to be pragmatic. They don't just do what they do because it's a good ministry principle. They do what they do because they care, because they have the heart of God. All right, I want to challenge and encourage you. We come back on the other side of the break as I speak with Yesu Padam.
Cleansing flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, it's a funny thing. Here in America, well, I'm in Rotterdam, Holland right now, but as an American, I'll say here in America, and where you're hearing our broadcast emanating from our studio in America. Here in America, land of abundance, we have so much. I told Yesupadam, a dear friend from India, that when we were growing up as kids, if we didn't finish our food, our parents would say, there's starving children in India. And if we would try to be clever, we'd say, well, then send it to them. Or if I eat it, how does it help them? But he was surprised to hear that we'd say those things. And look, you know, you support a pastor full time in the tribal regions of India for $50 a month. What's $50 going to buy us? How much rent is that going to pay for? How much food is that going to pay for? How much vehicle is that going to pay for here in America? Or you support a child full time for $25 a month. Come on, how far does $25 go in America? You drive in and out of New York City and blow $25 in tolls, just getting in and out of the city sometimes, or park for an hour or something. You're talking about providing for a kid day and night. And yet, what's interesting is that we're often handicapped by lack of funds in America. We're always telling you, hey, give and help us. We could do so much more if you help us more. And yet, without major support for years and years with the ministry in India, they prayed and God sent funds in. So, Yesupadam, is it true that through much of your ministry history that you did not have rich donors, businesses, sponsors from outside supporting you?
That's very true.
All right. I know you pray, you have people praying around the clock and praying in tears, but on a daily basis, how many meals are you providing on a daily basis?
2,000 meals a day in one place. Plus, we have around 400 families that we need to support.
All right, so on the base, 2,000 meals a day. Then you have some other locations. We have discipleship schools and things. And then 400 families you're supporting. And there are many more you want to support. Just need, you need more funds. Okay. How is the money come in? I mean, what's the secret? What's the technique? Tell us your internet fundraising techniques and the media companies that you've hired to help show you how to raise more money.
Tears and asking God. And God touching the hearts of the people and providing us.
It's that simple. It's that simple. And look, I've gone over there for 22 years now running, and we have to, you know, raise funds to pay our airfare and get over there and stuff. And now you're able to put us up in a hotel. When we first came, the hotels we stayed in were kind of interesting, you know, challenging for us Americans, the different places we stayed. But I don't go there to bring you money, actually. I mean, hopefully trying to raise money on the radio and help in different ways. I go there in friendship and solidarity, but it's not like I've come all these years. I bring me and I minister. Every so often, maybe we can bring a little money, but I haven't used this to raise funds in America. You know, come back with all the pictures every year and now send us money. And I don't bring you money. God's connected you. And now there's a young man, a little bit older now, Korean. When I met him, I was teaching in Korea the first time in 1990. He came up to me. He was just wearing like a t-shirt. He was in a mission school there, but kind of looked unpresentable, like he didn't have any money, kind of a dirty shirt. He's missing a hand. He had an accident right before he got saved and his hand was chopped off. So he's missing a hand. He could barely speak English. And he says, I believe God calling me to be a missionary to India. And I thought, yeah, right, sure. But I thought, anyway, I'll pray for him. So it ends up God sends him to India. Some other Koreans come with him. He learns Korean, Telugu so well that they put out
a CD
of praise songs in Telugu. God uses him powerfully. He goes back to Korea. He connects with Korean businessmen that help fund the work. I remember when he translated for you, sometimes I didn't get your English right. And here he's translating, going straight into Korean powerfully. And now this man who's so impacted by your ministry, He goes with his wife and family, and they move off the coast of East Africa, Southeast Africa. They move to the island of Madagascar. What are they doing now in Madagascar?
It's amazing what's happening in Madagascar for the last 3 years. I went there three times now. Every August, I'm going there. We started a school with 80 children, a modeling love and care ministry is what we are doing in India. And in last year, they had 300, and this year they have 600 children. 600 children in 2 years in one school. And they are building a second school, and they are feeding every day two meals to the children of 600 children. And every Saturday, they go to the street, to the poor area where people live under the trees on the street, the old people, the children, and feeding them every Saturday. So then building churches there, and started a children home there, and built a church in a prison there.
Now, how did that happen? How did the church start in the prison?
Yeah, there's a high security prison with 1,000 people, and the authorities gave us permission to go there 2 years ago to preach the gospel. They brought all the prisoners into a big area in the middle of the prison, and we shared the gospel with them. I shared my testimony, and I asked them, how many of you want Jesus? Out of 1,800 people raised their hands in the middle of the prison, and we distributed Bibles to them. Then the church, the prison authorities came to us and said, would you mind building us a church inside the prison? And they said that's the first time in the history of the nation they have a church inside the prison. And the Lord helped us through our friends in U.S. to raise money. In 3 months, we built a beautiful building in a dirty prison there. And the prisoners made the bricks. We provided the material, the prisoners work. And today, every day, the prisoners meet in the church. And after we built the church, we went there. It's a lively worship inside the prison. And wow, they were transformed, they are changed. And then after we went there, the Red Cross came. They have no toilets there, a very dirty kitchen. The Red Cross came in and they built a beautiful kitchen for them, beautiful toilets for them, and a medical center. Then it's like a transformed. And wherever the gospel goes, God transforms the place. Mm. That's what we are watching in the prison.
You shared with the students at Fire School of Ministry Europe here in Rotterdam, Holland. You shared with them about ministry in Sierra Leone. You talked about when I was preaching in India once and gave a bold message that was difficult for you to translate because it was controversial, and saying, who's the real God, this famous idol, or Jesus the Lord? And you were preaching the same way in Sierra Leone, Muslim-dominated nation, and saying Muhammad doesn't save and Allah doesn't save, it's Jesus who saves, and your translator somehow managed to translate. Well, what happened as a result of that?
Amazing thing. You know, as Bible says, gospel is the power of God unto salvation. And hundreds of Muslims came to the altar call when we give the altar call, gave their hearts to the Lord. And then we did in 2-3 cities. Then took 4 of the leaders from there to India to train them for 3 months, gave them a vision about their nation. I said, they asked them to see what God is doing in India. And I said, if God can do it here, God can do it in Sierra Leone. And they went back and started going to the villages, preaching gospel, planting churches through our friend Pitts from US. That brother is so much involved with that. And then after some time, they started 3 schools, churches planted, Bible school, and the elections came. And one of the Christian brothers stood for the presidency, first time in the history of the nation. And because of what our brothers has done, Christian brothers in the country, they gave them eyeglasses, even to the military. 100,000 eyeglasses were distributed through Pitts events from U.S. And because of that, Muslims thought Christians are better helping them than the Muslims. And they elected in the history of the nation first time a Christian man, Dr. Ernest, to be the president of the country.
Friends, the gospel makes dramatic impact, which means no matter what the state of America is right now, with gospel revival, with followers of Jesus living like followers of Jesus, which means disciples, those who forsake all, gain all, those who say, Jesus, you're the Lord of my life, I yield myself to you. You will have to swim against the tide. You will have to go against the grain. There will be opposition. There will be hardship, but the rewards will so massively outweigh it that Paul, who suffered way more than most any of us are going to suffer, Paul said, I consider that the sufferings of this present age are not even worth being compared with the glory which shall follow. It'll be worth it. Stand for Jesus. Share the gospel. Be unashamed. Say, Lord, here I am. Send me. Use me. If God could use Yesu Padam, if God could use me, if God could use these pastors in Africa, if God could use our Korean friend in Madagascar, he can use you. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, we have one last segment here with my dear friend, Yesu Padam. But if you haven't gone to his website yet, if you can't go right now because you're busy at work or in your car, just see if you can just jot this down. His website is LNC, as in love and care, LNCMinistries.org. Go there and click on sponsorship and pray. See if you can sponsor one or two or three. Maybe your church can sponsor four or five kids each month, full-time support. What time do they start their day in prayer?
5 o'clock in the morning.
Five, and they spend 5 to 6 in prayer and the Word?
Prayer for the Word.
All right, prayer, the Word, and then they have chapel after that.
Yes.
But this is all the kids in the children's home. This is how they grow up. And some of them are doctors in America today. Some of them are pastors in India. But this phenomenal track record of these kids following up and walking with Jesus for years and years to follow into their adult lives. $25 a month is their room, board, shelter, everything, meals, the education. And then $50 a month sponsors full-time. Just one person can sponsor full-time a pastor in the tribal region, reaching people that most of us will never get to. I've gone to some of these tribal regions and they take forever to get to, and I can go in and share the gospel and go out. They live there. And some of them can't live with their kids because it's too dangerous or because there's not proper food supply, there's no education. So they have their kids raised back at the home base with Yesu Padam and the workers there while they go to reach the lost. $50 a month supports them full-time. So go to the website lncministries.org. And click on sponsorship, and you'll be glad you did. You'll be really glad you did. Yesu Padam, let's talk about Tuni. You were working in a city called Tuni. You have been following Jesus now for a number of years, and you go into a village to talk to them about Jesus. What happened?
Well, the group of men came and said they don't want to listen about Jesus. They said we are Hindus and we don't want... Basically, they think it's an white man's religion and American religion. They said, we don't want that.
And didn't you even find people in Tuni that didn't know who Jesus was? Never heard of Jesus, didn't even know who he was?
They didn't even know even sometimes. You know, most of them, like in the villages, they don't really know who Jesus is. And they know about the Christianity, but they don't know who is Jesus, what he has done on the cross.
All right, and in this case, yeah. So these people then... They knew they didn't want you to preach because they were Hindus.
Yes.
So what happened?
And I tried to explain to them that Jesus was not a white man. He was born in the Asian continent. And it's not an American religion. In the process, I didn't realize that I was making them mad. And they warned me, really. They said, if you still continue to talk to us about Jesus, we will beat you. And we hear that number of times, but they don't beat us every time. And I watched them bending down, picking up rocks, and I still didn't believe that they're going to hit me. Then suddenly, you know, the rocks started hitting me all over my body, and two strong, one on my right forehead and one on my hand. And they were really hurting even afterwards. Then I realized that my head and my hand was broken. I touched my head, I saw the blood. And when I saw my blood, I thought that this blood is for my Jesus who gave all his blood for me. Not for gangs, not for communism. When I signed with my blood for the communism, I saw blood of many people, but this is my blood for my Jesus. That thought filled my heart with joy, and there was a visible smile on my face. And I showed them my blood, and I said, I still love you because Jesus loves you. And nobody accepted the Lord immediately, but I have to leave from there. And had 6 stitches to my head and a bandage to my hand. After 2 months, a group of men came to my house, and they asked me, do you know who we are? And I said, who are you? And they said, we are the people who thrown rocks on you, who broke your head, and you showed your blood and said you still love us because Jesus loves us. They said, we did not understand everything you said, but that one thing you said really touched our hearts. And 75% of the whole village gave their hearts to the Lord. They came to me to come back to build a church there.
And many years later, we went and held a big gospel rally and even ate at the home of one of the pastors who was one of the elders who stoned you. That's the power of the gospel. And brother, you've seen your people sacrifice much for the gospel. You've seen your people beaten. You've seen people whose lives were literally threatened and some even killed. I remember when I arrived 1 year and you were just heartbroken that one of the pastors had been beaten to death by Hindu radicals. And then they burned his body and told his family, if you say anything to the authorities, we'll kill you. And I washed that woman's feet, that martyr's widow, one of the most emotional experiences I ever had, because we laid hands on that man and sent him out. Once your people heard that someone not just beaten but martyred, and others in the state of Orissa, many, many killed, and 50,000 Christians fled for their lives and terrible atrocities. And we heard from one woman whose husband had his head chopped off with an axe by radical communists because they claimed he was an informer right in front of her. And she was there, and her daughter stood up and said she was going to live for God. When your people heard about this, one of your workers killed, and now it's graduation, and we're going to send them out, what effect did it have on them?
No, they know their lives doesn't belong to them, that life belongs to Jesus. And they know either by life or by death, they are called to preach the gospel. And as long as they are alive, they know they have to preach the gospel. But we cannot live in fear of life, of fear of persecution. And many times it's a great honor for someone to die a death like that, to lay down life for Jesus, who laid down his life for us. What an amazing opportunity for that. And I know it's not easy to go through that, but once you go through that, it always brings joy. And I have gone through those situations number of times, and it's a joy. It's a joy.
And I remember the first message I brought, and to the people that were going to be graduating and sent out, and to the pastors that were back in for the pastors' meeting, about blessed are those who are persecuted for the gospel. And the privilege. And I remember the meeting ending and people dancing and singing for joy and saying they were so encouraged that they had the honor to suffer for Jesus. Friends, this is the real deal. This is the real gospel. This is no hype here. Yes, our own ministry could use funding on a regular basis, absolutely. But I want to encourage you to get on the front lines with Yesu Pottom. Go to the website now, Love and Care Ministries, lncministries.org. Click on sponsorships. Sponsor child, full-time, $25 a month. Pastor, full-time, $50 a month. You won't regret it. If you're unable to do that, just click donate and help them with a gift, and you will have much treasure in heaven, and you will be amazed with where your finances went. And let me speak to every one of you listening, friends. This is my bottom line today. Your life is not your own. You've been bought with a price. Live your life in a way that is worthy of the Savior. He gave everything for you.